Volume 2. Minimum
wage! Yeah! You know what it means when they pay you minimum wage? You know what they're trying to tell you? It's like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
Well, get ready for all of the doomsday scenarios. The sky is falling, the end of the world. If they raise the minimum wage, all jobs will be gone. There'll be no more employment. Everyone will be fired. There'll be no more jobs because the wages are too high. And the other one, you know, automation. They'll automate everything. Well, let me let you in a little secret. They're going to automate anyway. So while we still have a job, you should at least make a reasonable wage. Just my thought. Anyway, today, House Democrats unveiled the Raise the Wage Act. And here to share some thoughts on that, I've asked our good friend Mark Price. He's a labor economist with the Keystone Research Center, also working with the group here in PA, Raise the Wage PA, to raise our minimum wage as well. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's always wonderful to be here.
So the sky's going to fall, Mark. A hamburger is going to be $75,000 a piece, and we won't have a giant buffet of fast food like we had the other day for the Clemson players.
These will be terrible times. You know, you, of course, are being funny, but I was just on the radio, a different radio, not as good a radio program as this, the other day with the Chamber's spokesman, and he literally made this argument that, oh my goodness, they raised the minimum wage to $15 in New York City, and you can't get a cup of coffee anywhere.
Nowhere? No coffee?
No coffee, man. It's you know, it sort of boggles the mind that these people can make these arguments in an open forum, but they make them. You know, of course, the reality is that you can get a cup of coffee in California and Seattle in New York City. Just as you can anywhere else in the country. You often hear these sort of strange arguments about raising the minimum wage. And thankfully, a large number of folks in the U.S. House and the Senate have signed on to the Raise the Wage Act, which will raise, hopefully, the wage in the whole country to 15 by 2024.
I'll tell you, you know, it's a... My first thought is look, as I said at the beginning, you know, back in 2012 when we were first talking about this, as this was beginning to take root, you know, people were saying, well, 15 is completely outrageous. I'm going, no, you know, what happened to that reward for work thing that when you work, your life should get better? And, you know, even if you're working a minimum wage job, it should be something that you can exist on. I don't know how you exist on 7 1/4. And I don't know how you'd exist on 15.
Yeah, and, you know, that same chamber spokesman sort of acknowledged you can't exist on 7.25. Or if you are, you're you know, couch surfing with friends, you're relying on the local food bank. It's just certainly not enough. And the fact that we kept that entry-level wage as low as 7.25 for as long as we have has sort of put a little bit of extra weight and kept wages lower for workers that are earning a little bit more than 7.25, all the way up to 15. We've seen less growth in hourly wages here in Pennsylvania than in every other state that has managed to raise the minimum wage. And, you know, that's money that's not in our pockets here in Pennsylvania, which is terrible and certainly something we should reverse.
Yeah, you know, because I remember the arguments, you know, of when other states would raise their minimum wage. They go, oh, we can steal jobs from them because, you know, their wages are higher. And yet I'm not seeing all of the jobs fleeing into Pennsylvania from other states.
Right. You know, and again, you will often hear, you know, you raise the wage in Pennsylvania and all the pizza companies are going to go to New Jersey. And, of course, you know, New Jersey raised its minimum wage, as did New York, as did every neighboring state. And lo and behold, it's not the case that all the pizza places in the region are located now in Pennsylvania because our wages are lower. In fact, when you look at food services as a whole, an industry that uses a disproportionate share of low-wage workers, folks who would be impacted by a minimum wage increase, in every one of those states, you have seen faster growth in that sector than you have seen here in Pennsylvania, even though we've kept our wage low. It's sort of an odd sort of thing to have stick out for these folks when they've been arguing so strenuously that, you know, as you said, you know, the world will come to an end if we raise the wage.
Yeah, the dogs and the cats will sleep together.
My favorite line.
The other thing that I think is important about this is because, you know, I'll tell you, I like organizing. I like, you know, people getting active and engaged in things. But, you know, I'm kind of tired of fighting for minimum wage increases. There should have been an index. There should have been a way to make sure that it doesn't get eroded by a decade of inflation. You know, maybe we could solve that problem. And this Raise the Wage Act actually has some indexing in it, right?
Absolutely. And not just your average everyday indexing. Typically, I know it's exciting. It's an innovation in policymaking, which is, you know, makes me excited, but, you know, I'm kind of a geek. 18 states across the country already have indexing. So New Jersey and Ohio are two examples. The indexing there uses the consumer price index, which is a not unreasonable approach. You know, basic idea as the average price level sort of weight up, you know, the increase in the price of milk and gasoline and what those represent in a family budget. As those prices rise, you get a few cents a year increase in the minimum wage. The Raise the Wage Act, instead of using the consumer price index, is proposing using the growth in median wages. And, you know, your listeners hopefully are not falling asleep on us as I'm describing that. The reason that's important is that really what we're talking about when we're talking about raising the entry-level wage, the minimum wage, is we want to keep it near where sort of middle-class workers are. So back in 1968, it was roughly half the minimum wage at $1.60 an hour. That was half of the median wage for a full-time, full-year worker at $3.15. And today, the minimum wage at $7.25 is less than a third of the wage that a middle-class worker earns. And so by the Raise the Wage Act, if it eventually passes, including this indexing to the median wage, we're doing a better job than if we were just using the consumer price index of making sure that we're not making people poorer, right? That we're, because when wages grow slower, especially for people who are sort of just a little bit outside the middle class, it's harder to afford things like rent and food. So when you're indexing appropriately, as this is suggesting, you'll see less stress on those households going forward, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So does $15 an hour by 2024, does that put us near that 50% number? Where does it put us on that scale?
In Pennsylvania, that gets us to just about 53% of where we think median wages will be. I mean, obviously, you have to project out into the future, but based on growth and what we think of in terms of wage growth going forward, we'll basically get just a little bit past where we were in 1968, which is a great thing.
No, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Republicans love to demand work. They just don't want to pay for it. I mean, I look at the shutdown that's going on right now. They love making people work. They just don't want to pay them. And this is one of those things where I go, you know, at the end of the day, every job I've ever had made my life a little bit better. You know, I went to work, I got a paycheck, and I was able to make it to the next week. Sadly, there are so many people who go to work and at the end of the week go, I still can't make it till tomorrow.
Yeah. And, you know, when you often hear the arguments these folks will make, they talk about these, you know, mandates that you're putting on employers, these terrible burdensome mandates. And no one ever asked the question, you know, if you've got a business model that can't possibly succeed and be profitable without pushing people into poverty, maybe you don't have a God-given American right to run a business, right? Maybe part of the problem is that your business plan sucks, that you're not good as an entrepreneur. And typically, you know, these kind of folks are the ones advocating for creative destruction in the larger economy. And I think when you look across the state, one of the things that's beginning to emerge from some of the research is that, in fact, yes, when you raise wages, it does drive some employers out, but it also brings new employers into a sector. So it creates a bit of innovation. In the same way, then in the long run, it's probably going to emphasize, as you talked about, some degree of automation, which is actually a good thing. There will always be low-wage jobs in the economy. We have a responsibility to making sure that the low-wage jobs that exist, wherever they exist, pay a living wage.
Yeah, I was going to bring up automation because, you know, I'm sure you've seen the report, as many of us have, that within, you know, I guess the next 15, 20 years, half of all jobs across the globe will be automated. And, you know, one of the big arguments is, well, you know, they're going to automate and you're going to lose, you'll get nothing. And that's probably true, which is why I think we need to have a much better tax code to make sure that we we reap some of the benefits of technology.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people forget there was a lot of automation. There was a lot of industrial development that went on from the 1945 to around 1973. And yet that was a period when we had pretty good, actually very good, especially relative to our current pattern of growth in wages. We had very strong growth in middle-class wages, wages at the bottom. In fact, so much so that they grew as fast as wages at the top. And that's an era with a lot of innovation. So I think it's important to remember that we're always going to have capital. We're always going to have robots. They're going to be here. It's just important to keep the distribution of income and make sure that the jobs that exist are paying good wages. And, you know, if it ever does come to it that the robots put us all out of business, well, then, you know, we'll have to band together and come up with a new way of making a living. But I think, you know, I'm in that group of economists that certainly would acknowledge that automation is important, that, you know, the robots are coming. But, you know, it's not the apocalypse, at least yet. And even if it does achieve apocalyptic proportions, you know, we're human beings. We'll get together. We'll figure out a way to make it work.
Well, that's the hope anyway. And look, I'm not a Luddite, but, you know, I don't want my neighbor to lose their job because a machine came in and took their job and just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfectly reasonable. And, you know, it's one of those trade-offs that we haven't done a good job when you think about sort of trade, right, international trade. We all like goods and services made, you know, wherever they're made. But it often does create these problems in the economy where people lose their jobs because we've now engaged in trade. And I think the same impacts happen with technology, and we just have to take sort of a joint responsibility that when people do get hurt, that we take care of them, that we make sure that they transition, if they can, to a good job. But if they can't, then they need to have an expectation that they're going to get a reasonable income. You know, these are not hard things to do. They shouldn't be, but politically sometimes they can be hard because, again, it's often these very rich people who, you know, point fingers and, you know, accuse other people who actually work of being lazy, right? And I think, you know, in the end, automation like trade can be good for us. We just have to take control of the economy and make sure that we demand that, you know, everybody's okay after we engage in these kinds of deals, whether it's trade or automation.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've talked about, you know, all along through this Fight for 15 movement is, you know, the other part of 15. It's, you know, Fight for 15 and a union part. That, because you talked about, you know, end of World War II to 1973, you had strong growth, wages kept going up. And I would argue a big part of that was the ability to demand better wages, hours and conditions, because we had much higher union density. As things continue to fall, and we're almost at a point in the private sector where, you know, union density is about the same as it was when it was illegal. So, yeah. You know, the ability to fight for those better wages, hours and conditions is being hampered. And while I am all in favor of legislation like this to, you know, to prop up the bottom, we need to have something also to make sure that there's a voice for those folks and for everybody up the scale as well.
I think that's absolutely correct. And really, if you look, I think at this era, one thing that's quite clear is that when we lost union bargaining power, that also lines up pretty closely with the fact that we were much more rarely got minimum wage increases, and when we got them, they were quite small. So that really, as union power has weakened, our ability even to raise the minimum wage has weakened, right? And that the two things are related and actually, you know, quite important. So to the extent that we're able to get the minimum wage higher, I think you're absolutely correct. Our ability to sustain that, right? Our ability, for instance, to get an inflation adjustment really is a function of we need more bargaining power in a larger economy. So I think if our best dreams come true, that we do actually get something like a $15 minimum wage with an inflation adjustment, that's only going to be possible if we begin to see a regrowth of bargaining power, right? So, you know, looking out of the West Coast and those teachers on strike in L.A., we need to see more of that. We need to see people taking back opportunity.
I'm right there with you.
Making, yeah.
No, absolutely. Last question I've got for you, because I got to ask, economist and all of that, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, on a kind of throwaway comment, alluded to a 70% top marginal tax rate. Where are we on that?
We are absolutely in favor of that. I think, you know, you've talked in the past about why not have a maximum wage, and I don't especially have a problem with the maximum wage, but, you know, I'd be happy to have a top marginal tax rate. Again, if you were at above a certain threshold, say over $1 million, you're going to pay a tax rate of that every dollar above $1 million of 7%. You know, some might go as high as 80, maybe 90. I think that's absolutely a wonderful idea. Again, because the danger, and we've seen the danger in the economy the last 40 years, is that when you allow the rich to get that much richer, they take political power, and they hurt us all. They slow the growth in wages, not only for the middle, but folks at the bottom. So it's very important to restrain that power by doing things like having very high tax rates. So, you know, it's an amazing thing, Rick. You know, these kind of discussions about returning to those eras of high top marginal tax rate was very hard to find, you know, a decade ago. And you've been doing this for so long. It's you, of course, talking about these things. But, you know, in the broader society, I think this is probably the first time in my memory that I've seen a real mature conversation about, you know, 70% top marginal tax rate. It made me very happy to see that take off and see the right just go completely bonkers. Yeah. So it's a good sign.
No, absolutely. Good stuff. Mark, as always, I appreciate the time. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Oh, thank you.